New Year to everybody. I hope you had a quiet, restful, and blessed time. With that being said, it's time to get back to work. So, with that being said, meeting's called to order. Either Daryl or Joe, can you make sure that we got a call, but is every region represented?
I'll do a quick roll call, but I think we are. So, North Region?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep.
Ron Early's here.
Cool. East Region?
Staples here.
Lee's here.
South?
Herman.
Herman's here. West? West Region?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thanks, sir. Cool. All right, we got a plan.
Okay. With that being said, old business, as we talk about that, is there any, I don't know of any. Daryl, Joe, do you have anything that needs to be brought up from past meetings?
I don't have anything.
All right, with that being said, again, just as noting, if anybody has questions about prior meetings or whatever, everything is online, so they can go to the Fire Commission website. With that being said, new business, we'll first talk about, unless you've got something else that's not on the agenda, Daryl, let's start with the not-for-profit labor market study. And if you want to go forward with that, sir, the floor is yours.
Yes, sir. So first, this is our three-year period where we had Wake County HR do a labor market study. I think that y'all are going to be very excited about what they're going to present today. We have Chris Clemens, Elaine Barnes, and Misty, if I kill your last name, I'm sorry. Misty Philbin with Wake County HR. They did yeoman's work, I think, on this labor market study. They came back to us about 2 or 3 weeks ago with a first pass, and we had some conversations, and they went back and made some adjustments. So again, I think you're going to be very happy with what they got to present. So, Chris, are you going to, I've got it pulled up. You want to, are you going to present?
Yeah, if you don't mind clicking through it, that'd be fine.
Okay, you're ready.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. I'm Chris Clemens. I'm a compensation supervisor with Wake County Human Resources. And I was involved with the last, this kind of study about 3 years ago. So I had a little bit of exposure, and then Misty just joined us this past year. So she did the lion's share of the surveying work and data analysis for us, which was nice. So I invite her to chime in as needed, and also Elaine, who is our manager. If you want to go on to the next slide, Daryl. These are the benchmark titles that we surveyed for. You're all familiar with these titles. Firefighter 123, driver operator, officer 1. Administrative assistant 1 and 2 in a fire environment, the officer 2 and the executive officers 1, 2, and 3. Okay. These were the organizations that we surveyed, and this was in consultation with Daryl and Joe. And you can see on the right, we had a pretty good response rate, all things considered. In this business, getting anything over 50% is usually pretty good. So we actually got 78% this year, which was quite an improvement over 2018's rate of 40%. So you can see who we sent it out to here. It's all listed on the left, and then who responded in that second column where they're indicating who responded.
And we
wanted...
So we can
test,
please.
Okay.
Yeah, we
unless there was a question.
Hold on one second, Chris. If you're not muted, please mute yourself other than you're speaking. We're getting a lot of reverb.
One of the things that I think you would start is
Chief Smith.
We can go to the next.
Chief Smith, could you mute yourself, please? Sorry about that, Chris.
We can go on to the next slide, I think.
Thank you.
So this is kind of the, we ended up, again, we got survey responses from all of those organizations. And then when we went back with our initial analysis, we discussed it with Daryl and Joe and decided to kind of hone in a little more on direct competitors and those who were paying a little bit higher for the firefighter too. So we redid the analysis, again, basically focusing in on those that we consider to be more direct competitors. And the rough results are here, and it shows what the differential is at the midpoint compared to our local market composites. And you can see all those. And we'll share this presentation with you afterwards, too, so you can take a closer look at it. I won't read through them all if you want to go ahead to the next slide. So this is the current structure. And one thing we did this year, which we didn't do 3 years ago, I'm not sure if it's been done in the past or not, when we look at salary structures, we try to bring some consistency and well, for lack of a better term, some structure to them. So I was kind of curious, as we were looking at the rates and looking at how we were going to adjust them, to see what the differentials were between the ranges. And usually we look at the midpoint when we make those differential determinations. But you can see for the current structure, the midpoint differentials were kind of all over the map as you go up through the structure. 5% up to 7.6%, up to 16.7% as you move up in the structure. And then the range width, while they were pretty consistent for the non-exempt roles, they, again, were sort of all over the place for the exempt roles. So as we were looking at adjusting the rates and adjusting the structures, we thought maybe we could bring some order to this. So you'll see on the next slide that what we proposed, if you want to move on, Daryl, was to bring some consistency to those midpoint differentials that's more in line with best market practices, and then also some consistency with the range width. And so you can see here, we for the non-exempt, we had a midpoint differential at 7.5% as you move up in the series, and then a range width of 70% throughout the structure, 15% differentials for the exempts. And then on the next, these are all the proposed rates at this time, but I'll show you a comparison of the old versus the new on the next slide here. And again, what we keyed in here on was the minimum for the firefighter two. That seemed to be where you were having the most trouble. And so the structure, as seen on the last page and also on this page compared to the old structure, was built around that minimum. So those range widths and midpoint differentials were all built around this 21.17 for the minimum for the firefighter two. And you can see how things increased just in terms of the rate at minimum, midpoint, and maximum throughout the structure on this page.
Chris, right quick, before they get very much excited. So these are based on the 40-hour work week people. So for your firefighter two who works a shift, when you plug that into your spreadsheet, and we do, like Chief Polk likes to call it, the reverse engineering, the actual starting salary for a shift firefighter at the firefighter two position is going to be recommended at $1,384 in lieu of $1,153, which it was before. So just want to make sure you understand these are based on 40 hours. We got to reverse engineer to get back into the shift position.
Okay, we can move on to next. Okay, so this shows the difference between our recommended new midpoint compared to our local market composites. And you can see we're, you know, pretty much on target within 10% or less for most of these. And that's part of that is a function of bringing some consistency to the structure. We're a little bit off at those exempt levels, but I think that in the long run, bringing some consistency to the structure is going to be an improvement overall. Next page. For our administrative staff, we're recommending that we use the county titles and the county ranges for administrative specialist and administrative coordinator. We did a little bit of classification work to determine that those roles were comparable to what we have within county government, and these ranges would be an improvement over their current rates as well. Next step. Here you can see the impact overall. Increases to minimum at the different levels total positions and title and increases to minimum. In 20, oh, I'm sorry, for the 2080s. Okay, I see what it is here. We have 2080s here and then the 2920s. So you can see there's a considerably more increases to minimum for the 2920 schedule.
I want to point out right quick here, too, Misty and I, or Misty's done some additional calculations. So, yeah, and you're right here. The cost salary only is around $297, but when you figure this all in benefits, we're looking in the neighborhood of around $550,000 for the all in.
Yeah, benefit costs are, I think, like around 25, 26%, if I'm remembering correctly. All right, next slide.
Chris, that's all the slides I got.
That's all the slides you got? Okay. I guess we'll take questions at this point.
Darryl, you may plan to speak about that, but talk about compression.
If I can speak to that real quick, Darryl, I should have mentioned that earlier. The only mandatory cost is to bring employees to the new minimums where they're below the minimums. The county is conducting a countywide compression study, and we have in the RFP that we put out, we did include the nonprofits. So they will be part of that study. We may have to deal with them a little bit differently, but that is where we are expecting to address compression. And Darryl, if you have anything to add to that.
Yep, so Chief Pope, our plan is to address the salary study here, right to start with in FY23. So these changes will take place July the 1st. And then as Chris said, Wake County government has included the tax district in a total compression study that will be implemented as soon as it is complete. Chris, and don't let me put words in y'all's mouth, but they're thinking it's going to be done by the end of the calendar year. So we would either make mid-year adjustments or address the compression beginning in FY24. HR, Wake County HR feels very strongly about including the tax district in this study with a company that does this instead of us just trying to take a stab at it, move it like we've done before. We think it would benefit y'all a lot better by having it involved with this countywide study. Chris, is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. The timeline, again, we don't expect it to be before July. Hopefully sometime after July, hopefully soon after July, but definitely by the end of the year. And again, hopefully sooner than that. And I think the main point with the including these positions in with the countywide compression studies, everybody will be treated in the same way.
And just on top of that as well, as always, the county is looking at the merit pay increase beginning in July 1 of 2023 for your existing employee. And there are some loose discussions, and I'm going to say that again, around cost of living adjustment as well. So your existing people will be getting moved away from these others a little bit before compression is even taking place. Chris, is that fair?
Very fair. I'd say it's pretty likely that there will be some kind of cost of living adjustment. What we recommend to the board and what the board approves may not be the same thing, but there's been a whole lot of discussion about it, cost of living, and then merit on top of that.
Darryl.
Yes, sir.
This is Matt. Two things. The first, so we went through something very similar 4 years ago. We did a study similar to this, which basically it just addressed bringing people to the new midpoints, which I think is great. It's a great start. What it did, though, it severely compressed our organization, and then we did a pay equity study the following year, as you remember. And the only point I'd like to make, and I think this is a great start. I just, based on our experience, this portion of fixing the pay was the least expensive. Once this goes into effect and we compress our ranks to get that fixed, to do a true pay equity study, which it seems you're going to do next, based on what we did, was much more expensive to correct. So I just want to make sure that we see that going ahead, that to fix this, to get everybody up to a new minimum is great. It is going to compress people in ranks and create somewhat of a morale issue until the compression gets addressed, and that probably will be the most expensive piece of this, just based on what we went through. And then the question I have, so the hourly rate for the new firefighter position, when you had mentioned Northern Weight reverse engineering it, what essentially, if that was to be reverse engineered, what is the, what essentially be the starting salary of a firefighter now?
I'll share that in just a minute, Matt. I've got my piece of paper in front of me. I want to let Chris get through with his presentation. But the new firefighter rate for the not-for-profit departments would be $13.84 at a minimum starting rate for a shift employee. And that is moving from $11.53. So that is a significant increase.
Now, I understand. What does that equate as the annual salary?
Oh, I got you. $46,216.
Okay, so for an entry-level certified firefighter, the starting salary would be $46,000.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
And remember, and if y'all remember correctly, this only, when we talked about doing this, because the municipals are doing their own pay studies, this moves up the bar for us to pay a municipal if they're in, you know, in levels and all, but this would only be applied to the not-for-profits immediately as the towns are doing their own studies. But it does move, again, move the bars up.
Daryl, Tim. In your numbers, I know the last time the pay study was done, Nick, we got to factor in the cost to the part-time employees, moving their hourly rates up to meet the minimum of the pay grade. Is that factored in this time?
Yep. The Joe and I have. I'll share. Let me. Chris, are you finished with your? Can I take your presentation down?
Yeah. I'm just here for questions at this
okay.
point.
Okay. Hold on 1 second, Steve. So here is essentially the new appendix that would be part of the staffing and comp guidelines. So if you'll see at the bottom, these will be the part-time employees. We have adjusted all these to meet what the 40-hour employees are. So we have considered those in there. That is why we are in the $550,000 range for part-time. Well, not for the part-timers, but for the entire implementation of the study. Any more questions for while we got Wake County HR on for this piece?
Daryl, I know it's been talked about a lot, but also with the part-timers, the merit increase and figuring out a way to include them each year versus having to ask for it.
Yeah, I think if you look at the change in rate right there, that's a pretty good change. So. We would have to look at that because y'all use pool part-time people. This is quite a big adjustment. I think it would take care of most any merit. It would probably be actually more than merit. If you did a 4% merit on the existing salaries of 1764, I think the 2117 is going to be a whole lot higher.
Oh, I agree, but, you know, this is going to be in place, but then, you know, 3 years later, you know, are we back where we started? But, you know, I think it's a very good change that's needed, you know, considering what the cost of living in Wake County has gone up extraordinary in the last year. So I think I would be surprised if any fire chief wasn't, you know, happy to see the results of this, because of, you know, the days of hiring somebody at $35,000 to work and live in Wake County is, you know, is not practical anymore.
I agree, and I think when we get to 24, I think there will be, because we're moving into FY23, in FY24, I think that is probably something we could do, is when we do 3% merit or whatever it is applied to the part-time rates as well.
Okay, thank you.
Darrell, our current policy is every 3 years, and with the current climate that we're dealing with now, and you see how far we got behind in the last 3 years, are we doing ourselves an injustice by using 3-year intervals, or should we revisit that and maybe look at a shorter time frame?
That's a tricky question, because obviously a $550,000 increase to the tax district budget just on salaries alone is going to limit some other things we can do, unless the board just wants to keep increasing taxes. And if you remember, we weren't modeled to hit 15 cents until about 2030. I think if we revisit this yearly or every 2 years, it's going to bring that 15 cent cap into play a whole lot sooner. So I think it's just a kind of a double-edged sword. We're always going to chase the tail. I mean, I think y'all all know that. But the minute that now that this has been shared, I guarantee you that there's some municipal chiefs that are going to be going to, and I don't blame them, that will be going to their town boards and saying, hey, we need to do another salary study because the county has moved theirs up. So I don't think we can get away from chasing the tail. I would love to hear Elaine and Chris maybe talk about Wake County government as a whole is in the same thing. I mean, Wake County government is behind in the market for private industry. Chris and Elaine, you want to touch on that?
Yeah, that's definitely true. And obviously we have some areas that are more dynamic than others. We, as you know, we implemented a class and comp study for Wake County at the beginning of last year, and that took a pretty comprehensive look at our market position, and we were in pretty decent shape upon implementation, I would say, but we haven't done a comprehensive market study since that implementation, so we're gearing up to do that again. We have also addressed certain pockets like EMS. And a couple other areas where we've had issues similar to yours, I would say. So it really depends on the market, and I know this is a dynamic market too, but we're expecting to do that market analysis as we did in the past on an annual basis for countywide. But again, if there are issues that develop in certain areas, we are poised to address those as well.
This is Elaine. I think that was an excellent question to ask about. Is it time to change the frequency because of how the world is changing, and that you are going to need to be able to continuously attract and retain staff to your critical positions? So it may be a time, Darrell, for us to revisit, is every 3 years too long, to make sure that we are staying competitive at the nonprofit. I had not thought about it. Before Chris came, we did rotate our labor market studies. Every 3 years, we would rotate a group of classifications that we would study, because we had so many titles, we couldn't study all of them at one time. So that's where the 3-year interval might have come from, is that we rotated our 300 titles. We did 100, so every 3 years, 100 titles were evaluated. But it may be time to revisit it. There is a fiscal impact that Darrell will need to consider. But in terms of the question itself, Darrell, I would like us to talk about it.
Yeah, I think the key here, I think all the fire chiefs will agree, public safety as a whole, law enforcement, EMS, fire as well, we have a major supply and demand issue right now. Our recruitment numbers are way down. We're not getting no ways the number of applicants that we used to get. So we've got a small pool to recruit from, a lot smaller than what we used to have. And I think due to societal changes. And every 3 years, what we've seen now based upon waiting 3 years is a tremendous turnover in about year two to year three versus what we used to see.
I agree, Elaine, with you that we may need to look at it, you know, a little bit sooner. But again, we're against the cap where the general fund budget for the county government is kind of against the ad valorem, which we're nowhere near. Right. So it's kind of a great balancing act. And I also, you know, I've said this before, and it's not very popular to some of the smaller departments, but the smaller departments are going to have trouble no matter what we carry the salary to in retaining employees, because there's not a career ladder in place like it is with the larger departments. So I don't know that, you know, we can keep throwing money at it, but I just don't know that there's a total fix for the smaller departments without that larger career ladder when they're looking to move on to a department that has five or six stations or many more is Cary and Raleigh, where they can move up a career ladder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to say, add a couple of things to that point. And Misty hit me with a sidebar comment, which I thought was an excellent point. With the COLA that we're planning to do, or expecting that we will do, I should say, the board obviously has to approve it, but we will be recommending it. Angela's very interested in us also adjusting our pay structures according to the COLA. And I know that it doesn't accomplish the same thing as a market study, but what it does is it helps keep the structures in line with market without necessarily having to do a market study. We haven't had a COLA like that before, at least not in my time with Wake County, but I think you all would have a good argument in terms of keeping up with market to perhaps at least adjust your structures according to what the COLA is. Just something to think about.
Chris, too, I can't remember. I know I heard this. I called a couple of departments when we were working on this, and a couple of counties that I talked to said, gracious, will y'all please quit? Wake County is kind of its own market within the market. Y'all are so much higher than the other counties outside. So, again, Wake County is driving our own prices up for firefighters.
Yeah, and in other areas, what we're hearing is that, you know, you can go to a smaller county for similar pay, maybe lower, but you're not going to be worked as hard.
Chief Herman,
we have people leaving for other counties because they can get, you know, sign-on bonuses and things like that, which we're about to offer, but we haven't offered up until now. But they're not worked as hard in some of the smaller counties because the workload is just not as great. I'm not saying that's true for fire services. I'm saying it's true for other areas of the county. But we do, I think in some areas, we are having to lead the market in order to actually get employees into positions. And cost of living isn't helping as far as that goes, not in Wake County.
No, sir. Chief Herman brought up a question. So Chief Herman asked, why is the daytime firefighter or the 40-hour firefighter salary different than the firefighter two? Well, so if you have a firefighter two on a shift job, you're guesstimating that their annual salary is going to be $46,216, because if they take a day off on that shift and they don't meet the minimum hours work, they're not going to earn as much structural overtime. So it's really kind of a 7K thing. It's also based on structural overtime that will fluctuate between how many hours a shift hour firefighter work per year, as well as kind of, you know, working at nights and weekends. So Chief Herman, that's the reason it's a little bit different for the what we call the daytime or the 40-hour fireman versus the shift fireman. questions for anybody from HR?
Hey, Daryl, before we bow out, just let me just thank Chris and Misty for all the work that they did on this project. But I also want to thank you and your team, because we didn't get that significant increase in responses on our own merit. It was because of what you and your team did, and I want to acknowledge that, that the reason why we're getting these excellent results is because we had an excellent basis to start with survey responses. And then we had Daryl and Joe to guide us as subject matter experts in terms of the areas to hone in on in order to develop the structure that you've seen today. So we are hoping that what we've proposed today will help you as management attract and retain and keep good employees at your nonprofit. Wanted you to know that we are here to help, which is the reason why when the county initiated a compression project, I immediately said the nonprofit must be included in this project. So I slipped it in as a one-liner in the RFP, but I just wanted y'all to benefit from whatever the county benefits from. And we will continue to look out for you, and we just want you to know that. We're here to serve you.
Thank you, Elaine. And again, I appreciate Chris and your and Misty's work. This is probably the best turnaround on a study that we've seen. So greatly appreciate the chiefs helping get in returns. It wasn't just Joe and I, all the chiefs kind of sent emails out, and we got a good turnaround on this and good response back. Mr. Stagg, if there's no more questions for HR, I will entertain a motion for recommendation on moving forward with the new Appendix A to the staffing and comp guidelines.
If there's no other ones, I will entertain that motion too. So Daryl will put double B. Do I hear a motion?
Tim, motion to accept.
All right. Tim's got the motion. Do I hear a second?
Second. Thank you.
All right, Brian. Motion second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, like sign? Hearing no opposition, the motion passed. Daryl will make the necessary arrangements. And then from there, the floor is back to Director Alford.
Yep, and right quick, I have a spreadsheet that Misty has put together that indicates which one of the individual employees will need to be moved. It is inappropriate for me to share that on the screen as it has individuals and individual salaries, but I will break that apart and send it to each one of the chiefs so that you'll know when we start as July 1 the adjustments that need to be made in your budget, and we'll make sure that Aaron has that programmed in on our side as well.
Hey, Daryl?
Yep.
I've got a slightly updated presentation too that had that that cost with fringe in it. I'll send that to you so you can share it out, okay?
So thank you, Chris.
Okay. All right, thank you all. I think HR is going to bow out. Thank you all.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
So, Bob, the next long presentation is going to be on Joe. So I'll give Joe a little credit and the fire chiefs, because I know Joe's reached out to a lot of y'all. So we have our first data-driven look at the standards and principles from the long-range plan and how it affected each department, kind of where each department was at. So it's quite a lengthy presentation, but if you want to stop Joe and ask questions as you go through, I'm sure each one of you are going to have some questions if your department pops up. I will be making recommendations from this for either staffing or station as part of the budget process moving forward.
Boy, impressive. Sounds good. Joe, the floor is yours.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Stagg. Thank you, Daryl. Can you guys see that presentation up on your screen?
Joe, you're muted if you're talking.
Can you wake him up, Daryl?
Can you hear me now?
Go ahead, Joe.
I forgot to push star star. So can you guys see that presentation up on your screen?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So yeah, I just want to start out by echoing what Daryl said. You know, this is a long presentation and a lot of information that would not be possible without y'all's support and partnerships, especially, you know, our internal members, but also the fire departments, the chiefs, everyone that we've reached out to, Deputy Chief Holt as well, you know, his database that he worked on and set up. We've had many, many meetings on long-range plan and data, so thank you especially to him. And we've got a lot of good information here that we'll talk about. So kind of our topics for discussion today is just an overview of the long-range plan, guiding principles and standards. We're going to talk about the data process. We'll talk about travel times for first arriving units, effective response force for working structure fires, tanker evaluation for working structure fires, and then at the end, Daryl will talk a little bit about next steps and recommendations. So Wake County Board of Commissioners' goals and objectives was to establish a countywide standard for fire service in the unincorporated areas and develop a plan to achieve and sustain agreed-upon service levels. The long-range plan was recommended January 21st, 21 by the Fire Commission. And I just want to point out that it is for rural, unincorporated areas only, and this standard will become a measuring factor for decision-making on increasing or decreasing fire service resources. So looking at staffing and stations and equipment and that sort of stuff. Just want to point out that we are focusing on travel time right now. We realize that there are other pieces to the puzzle that are very important, such as call processing time and turnout time. But we are focusing at this point just on travel time. So when we start looking at the data and some of the spreadsheets, we're focused just on that travel time. So travel time for the first arriving unit running emergency traffic on all incidents should be 7 minutes 90% of the time in the unincorporated districts of Wake County. So this was one of the objectives in the long-range plan. So we're going to look at that today, as well as the effective response force for any reported structure fires responding emergency traffic, where the minimum of 16 firefighters should be in 12 minutes 90% of the time. And then of course we're also going to look at our tanker response. And in the long range plan, it was recommended that the effective response force for a structure fire, you know, did not initially include tankers. So tankers obviously are an important part of a structure fire response in the rural areas where hydrants are not available. Therefore, tankers should be looked at. And so we're also going to look at that tanker response. We're going to look at how long it's taking for those tankers to arrive on scene, how many were dispatched, and how many actually arrived on scene. So we evaluated that for our structure fire responses as well. So coming straight out of the long-range plan, when we look at our effective response force, we look at three engines, a rescue or a ladder, and a chief officer. That gives us 13 personnel. When we have an area that is non-hydrant and we need additional resources such as a tanker or water supply engine, that's where we look at the 16 or 19 personnel. And we'll break that down as we look at calls later on in the presentation. So let's talk a little bit about the data process. So it's a pretty lengthy process from kind of the beginning to the end where we, you know, first determine what our date range is. So, and for this presentation, we are looking at basically 9 months of data and gathering that data and looking at it and trying to figure out a way to present that to you as well. So we'll kind of go through each step one by one. So initially, we're going to determine the date range. We're going to gather the data. The data came from the database that Chief Holt actually set up, so we're utilizing that database to pull all this information. You can see here incident numbers, the problem, the address, Latin long, jurisdiction, date received, assigned, and route arrived. So all that information is coming from that database. So that's kind of the first step, is determining the date range and then gathering that data. Next, we filter that data. So we want to look and see what our travel times are for each department based on the information that we have. So if you notice here on the right-hand side in red, we have filtered that data from the highest time all the way down to the lowest time. So that's kind of step two. So step three is looking at the outliers. So one of the things we realized real quick was that we needed to have some sort of outliers in place. So when we looked and evaluated the data, our travel time for our first due in excess of 15 minutes was removed. So if we had any calls that were coming in at a travel time of 45 or 50, 60 minutes, then we removed those from the data set because that was either technological issues or human error, and we didn't want it to skew our overall data. There was one situation looking at the hook for Northern Wake where we did leave in a 30-minute travel time, and that's because we did have several incidents in that location that were in excess of 15 minutes, and we wanted to make sure that we captured that data. We also removed any travel times that were at a zero value. So we did have a lot of calls where the call came in, maybe the call received time, the call dispatch time, turnout time, in route time, and arrive time was all the same. So those were zero values for travel time. So we didn't want that to skew our data as well. So we did remove the zero values as well. So then we analyzed each incident over 7 minutes. So if we had 100 calls that came in over 7 minutes, then we wanted to find out why those calls were over 7 minutes. Was it because the unit was staged? Did the unit respond routine? Because of course we're only looking at emergency traffic. Did the unit come from another station? Were they at a place? Did another unit, maybe a Raleigh unit, arrived on scene first? So we wanted to evaluate each of those calls. So between myself, Bud, and Daryl, we kind of combed through all these calls as best as we could, and you can see there on the right-hand side in the yellow some of the notes that we took for those call types. So then we gathered CAD data. So we were pulling CAD reports to look at the notes to see if there was anything in there. We were also pulling your RMS, your fire reports, to look at different narratives and what's in the narrative to find out how many people were on each apparatus. And then, of course, we were making contact with some of you. You've received some phone calls from our office asking questions about different calls, or if there was a truck at a place, or maybe there was a neighborhood that you responded to quite often that was over 7 minutes. We would ask, is there a situation why? Maybe there were speed bumps that caused the response time to be greater. So we did make a lot of phone calls and talk to a lot of departments about those as well. And then we analyzed every working structure fire for ERF. So we wanted to look at all the working structure fires in the county for that 9-month time period. And we wanted to see if they were meeting their ERF, and if they were not, why. So here's just an example. You can see we took our soonest or en route time, which is the bold one there, which is 20:34:44. And 12 minutes after that is on the right-hand side, which is 20:46:44. And all the units that were highlighted in yellow arrived on scene within that 12 minutes. And that's how we calculated our ERFs. And we'll see that later in the presentation for each department. And then we evaluated our tanker response. So again, we looked to see how many tankers were dispatched, how many tankers arrived on scene, how long did it take those tankers to arrive on scene? So we have that information as well for each of those calls. And then the next part of the process was to coordinate with GIS. So we actually developed maps based on the actual incidents to see not only how long it was taking you to arrive on scene, but also how long is the mapping or the GIS mapping saying it's supposed to take. So we wanted to look at both sides. So you can see the map there on your left, and then on the right-hand side in the red is the actual time it took for you to arrive on scene, and then in the black there you can see the how long the mapping says you should take to arrive on scene. So we did that for our structure fire calls as well, and some of our over 7-minute incidents. And then we developed recommendations based on that data. So, you know, some of the discussions that we had in our office was, do we need to add additional firefighters? Do we need to look at adding additional fire stations or relocating fire stations? And those are some of the things that Director Alford will talk about at the end of the presentation. So, of course, with any project, there are challenges, and some of those challenges for us are listed here. So the first one, our current data system, and Chief Holt is aware of this, we are actively working with CAM on this, but we cannot pull CAM data very well on the system that Chief Holt has developed. He has worked with CAM, had a couple of meetings, and I think they are still actively working to get this information. So I think in the future we'll be able to pull that data just like we do for all the other departments. Another challenge is finding out if the apparatus responded routine. So we are only looking at calls where apparatus responded emergency traffic. So sometimes it can be difficult for us to know if that apparatus actually responded non-emergency. Did the apparatus stage? Also something that we were unable to find out based on the raw CAD data. So pulling those reports and pulling the RMS is where we're finding that information. Determining how many firefighters are on each apparatus, again, this is something that we've got to get from the RMS data or the fire report, not something that we can pull from the raw data at this time. We're also, our analysis is based on the incident problem, so what you're dispatched to, and not actually what you had when you arrived on scene. So that's something else that we ran into as well. Our timestamps, we did find on multiple occasions where timestamps coming from the MDT to CAD may not be accurate. We discovered that we had a couple of calls where our call received time was actually different than our in route. So they actually checked in route before the call actually was received, which was an error on the MDT. The time on the MDT was actually off. So we ran into a couple of situations with that as well. Call volume is another factor. Concurrent calls, you know, there's no way for us to track to see if there's concurrent calls going on at the same time, as well as where the apparatus responded from without pulling all of that, the reports. And then data did not say if another department arrived on scene first. So that's something else we're working on is if I pull a report for, let's say, Northern Wake, and Northern Wake arrived there in 9 minutes, it may not tell me that Raleigh arrived on scene in 4 minutes. So that was something that we had to work through as well. So those were some of the challenges that we faced while we were developing or working on this presentation.
Right quick, before Chief Smith's got a question, but also when Joe talks about data challenges, it's not that we ignored all this. It was staff time consumed checking in on all this, like where did apparatus respond from. We would pull the actual CAD reports and say, oh, this was Holly Spring Engine 2's district, but they were actually at Station 1 when the call came in. Just different things like that. So not saying we didn't check into it, it was just challenges that made the process a whole lot longer. Chief Smith, you have a question?
Yeah, I guess it's just a general question. It seems like some of these data challenges could be fixed if we were able to implement the two-way communication with emergency reporting, where emergency reporting would talk back to the CAD instead of just one-way feed. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, but I that is a Raleigh Wake question, and I doubt they're going to allow anything incoming. Again, that's a question for them.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, so this is the information that came out of the long-range plan that was originally created. So when I pulled the information in that PowerPoint from last year, the date range that was used is May of 19 to May of 20. And you can see the departments highlighted in yellow there are the ones that were not meeting their 90th percentile travel time. So if you look, Apex, Fuquay, Garner, Holly Springs, Mooresville, Northern Wake and the Hook, as well as Wendell, were all over that 7 minutes for the 90th percentile travel time. Based on our evaluation for this year, these same departments are actually still in not meeting that 90th percentile. So our date range that we pulled our data from was January 1st of 21 to September 30th of 21, so about 9 months of data. And the chart on your left-hand side, that initial assessment, you can see Mooresville, Holly Springs, Garner, Apex, Northern Wake, Fuquay, and Wendell were all well over their 7 minute for 90th percentile. Now, after we did our assessment process, you can see on the right-hand side, the departments that still were not meeting their 90th percentile were Garner, Holly Springs, Wendell, and Northern Wake and the Hook. And we'll look at all these departments individually on the next couple of slides. So looking at Mooresville, initial looking at unincorporated calls, they had 23. 90th percentile was 8 minutes and 57 seconds. They had 7 incidents that took longer than 7 minutes. And after we started going through that data, we realized real quick that there was 5 out of those 7 where another fire unit arrived on scene before 7 minutes. And the data, it just didn't pick up in the database. And then there was 2 that were zero travel time. So once we removed those calls, you can see that 90th percentile dropped to 6 minutes and 32, which is then meets the standard. So as far as Holly Springs, again, 8 minutes and 28 seconds was the initial 90th percentile. They had 52 incidents over 7 minutes. After we went through the data, they had 10 incidents that had incorrect times, 6 that they responded routine, 6 where another unit arrived on scene in less than 7 minutes, had 5 incidents where they had concurrent calls or the unit wasn't in the station, 4 where the unit staged, and 3 that were zero travel time. So even after removing those calls, you can see they're still slightly above that 90th percentile at 702. We did a GIS map just to look at some of the locations where they were responding to. And you can see here, they've got 2 addresses that even through the GIS modeling, they're over 7 minutes. So there's a couple of pockets there of concern on that right-hand side of the screen if you look at that mapping, and they're circled there as well. Looking at Garner Fire, initially they were 8 minutes and 5 seconds for 90th percentile, had 263 calls over 7 minutes, and found 44 where they responded routine, 26 where another unit arrived on scene in less than 7 minutes, 37 where it was concurrent calls, unit wasn't in the station, 13 where they were staged, and 22 with 0 travel time. So even after removing those calls, we're still at 7 minutes and 25 seconds for the 90th percentile and still 143 calls over 7 minutes. When we look at their mapping, you can see the pockets that we kind of have there, and they still have several calls where even with the GIS mapping, it's well over 7 minutes. So a couple of areas of concern here as well. The star on the screen, the red star on the map, that's the future station for Garner. And I think that's going to address some of these issues as well when that station's in place. We look at Apex Fire. They had 8 minutes and 12 seconds for their 90th percentile, 22 calls over 7 minutes. We found 3 where units were canceled and responded routine, 3 where units staged, 4 incidents where other units arrived on scene in less than 7, and 22 incidents with a 0 travel time. So after that evaluation, we landed on 6 minutes and 59 seconds for their 90th percentile, with 12 calls over 7 minutes. So real close to that 7 minute mark there for Apex. So Northern Wake, we looked at two different ways. We looked at Northern Wake as a whole, and you can see here they were initially at 7 minutes and 49 seconds for their 90th percentile with 146 calls over 7 minutes. 37 of those incidents were canceled or where they responded routine. 9 units staged. 30 units arrived on scene in less than 7 minutes, so another fire unit arrived on scene. And then 39 where there were zero travel times. So initial look, we saw that that dropped to 6 minutes and 35 seconds for 90% of the time, and 70 incidents over 7 minutes. But we wanted to take a look, because we did have several calls that were well over 15-minute travel time, and most of those were in that hook area. So we looked at the hook by itself. We wanted to kind of break that out and look at it individually. And what we found was we had 37 incidents in the hook for those 9 months, and the 90th percentile was 1508. 32 were over 7 minutes. We found 14 that were routine. They actually were all from the same address, but even after removing them, we still are at 14 minutes and 37 seconds for their 90th percentile. So definitely an area that is a concern for us. This is our GIS analysis for Northern Wake for that hook area. And you can see in red there the time it took to arrive on scene or the travel time for those addresses. And then in the blue, that is the mapping time. So even our mapping on a lot of these addresses are showing close to 14, 15 minutes. So looking at Fuquay, initially had a 7 minute and 55 second travel time for their 90th percentile, 161 calls over 7 minutes. We found 37 incidents where they responded routine, 28 units staged, 18 where another unit arrived on scene first, and 23 incidents with zero travel time. So after removing them, we had a 6 minute and 54 second 90th percentile for their travel time, and 78 calls that were over 7 minutes. So just below that 7 minute mark that we're looking for. We did do a GIS model for Fuquay as well, and you can see they've got a couple of addresses that are still over that 7 minute mark, a couple of little pockets, and the star in red is a proposed future station for Fuquay. So looking at Wendell Fire, 7 minutes and 37 seconds for the 90th percentile, 98 incidents over 7 minutes. Looking at their information, we had 7 calls that were routine, 21 where another unit arrived on scene, 6 where the unit staged, and 17 with zero travel time. So taking those out, we're still a little over 7 minutes at 701 for the 90th percentile. So again, looking at Wendell, you can see there's a couple of different pockets. We did have one address that was over the 7 minute mark for travel time, and the state or stag trail, that was one of the ones where we discovered was a lot of speed bumps in that area, which has slowed the unit from arriving on scene. So there's an extended travel time due to the speed bumps in that development. So looking at, so that was kind of the 7 minute piece of the presentation, but we also wanted to look at the structure fires and tanker responses as well. So looking at our structure fires in Wake County for that 9 month time period, we had 188 that were dispatched as a reported structure fire. After looking through those 188 calls, 45 were determined to be working structure fires. And this is where hose lines were deployed, crews made entry, what was taken out was, you know, light smoke or something that was very minor, maybe a fire inside a stove, something where units were cleared very quickly. We did not evaluate those, but we did look at the 45 that were true working structure fires. And out of those 45, there was 10 that did not meet the effective response force of the 16 firefighters on scene within 12 minutes. And we'll look at those 10 individually. So this is just kind of a summary of that. If you look again, 45 total structure fires. The ones highlighted on the right-hand side of your chart are the 10 that did not meet the ERF. This is just a map of those 10, just to kind of give you an idea of where they're located in the county. And you can see on the right-hand side there, that's Zebulon, Rollsville, Knightdale, Holly Springs, Fuquay, Garner. That side of the county is where we're seeing that ERF not being met right now. So first one we'll look at is Fuquay. It was at 13451 Old Sage Road. This was a tobacco barn fire. Unit arrived on scene to find a working fire. Initially dispatched was 3 engines, 2 tankers, and a chief. So again, if you look at your unit en route column and see where the bold one is, it's 135738. So what we did was we tried to find the first time that somebody checked en route, and that was 135738. And then we went 12 minutes from that first unit, and that's where we got our 12-minute time goal. So on the right-hand side at the top, you see 140938. So that's our 12-minute time goal. So the unit arrived column, where you have several that are highlighted, those are the units that arrived on scene within that 12-minute time period. And you can see that they ended up with 15 personnel within 12 minutes. So just shy of one person meeting the ERF. Looking at tankers for that call, they had 7 that were dispatched over the course of the whole entire call. 4 arrived on scene. First tanker arrived in 10 minutes and 20 seconds. Second one, 14 minutes. Third one, 17 minutes. And the fourth one in 26 minutes. So if you take your tankers out, they would have had 14 people. With the tankers in, they have 15. So a couple of calls in Garner. This one's 2504 Amy Court. You can see that it had a initial dispatch of 3 engines, 2 ladders, 4 tankers, and 2 chiefs. They arrived on scene, light smoke coming from a mobile home. It was a working fire. And you can see as well on the right, 10:37:33 is their 12-minute time goal. They had several units arrive on scene, but still only had 14 total personnel within 12 minutes. One of the things to take note on this call is the fire was under control before that 12-minute period. So, you know, looking at this call, it is possible that some units were cleared prior to that 12-minute time period. Looking at tankers, again, all of our tankers were cleared before they arrived on scene. So we ended up with 14 firefighters total, regardless of tanker response. Another call in Garner at 10408 Jordan Road. You can see our 12-minute time goal was 402.41. They dispatched 3 engines, 2 ladders, 3 tankers, and 2 chiefs, and had a total of 12 firefighters that arrived on scene within that 12-minute time period. Tanker response, 5 tankers dispatched initially, 3 that arrived on scene. First 2 arrived pretty quick, 6 minutes, and then 12 minutes. That third one was 51 minutes, though. So without tankers, we're looking at 11 firefighters within 12 minutes. With tankers, it was 12 firefighters within 12 minutes. Holly Springs call, so 4516 Green Breeze Lane. This call actually occurred at the same time as a fire alarm and structure fire in Holly Springs area. So they had 9 firefighters that arrived on scene within 12 minutes. So obviously during concurrent calls, we very quickly realized that the reason that we didn't have our ERF met for this call was because they had two other calls going on at the same time. Looking at Hopkins Fire, 4101 Lizard Lick Road. This was dispatched as a chicken house on fire, so it was initially dispatched as an outside fire and then upgraded. So you'll notice you've got two 12-minute time goals. Regardless, if we look at the first one or the second one, we still only had 14 firefighters on scene within 12 minutes. Looking at the tanker response for this call, five were dispatched, five arrived on scene. First one was there in less than 2 minutes, the second one was there in 9 minutes, third in 9 minutes, fourth in 24, and the fifth in 28. So initially we had 11 firefighters that arrived on scene within 12 minutes. With the tankers, it was 14 firefighters. Another one in Hopkins at 5416 Mitchelltown Road. 12-minute mark, we had 14 firefighters that arrived on scene. They initially dispatched three engines, a rescue, and four tankers. And this was an abandoned house that they had a working fire at. Looking at tankers for that call, they dispatched five, had five arrive on scene. You can see they arrived on scene pretty quick, 6 minutes for the first one, 11 for the second. Third one was 14, fourth was 17, fifth one was 22. So pretty good arrival time for our tankers. Within 12 minutes, though, we had 10 firefighters without tankers and 14 firefighters with tankers. Looking at Knightdale Fire, 5404 Cape Jasmine Lane. This was a dryer fire. I think several units were canceled, if I remember right. It was initially dispatched as four engines, a rescue, three tankers, and a chief. Going to Wake New Hope, 3120 Beagle Retreat Drive. Nothing showing upon arrival. This was later upgraded to a working fire. You can see they had 15 firefighters on scene within 12 minutes. And initial dispatch was three engines, a rescue, a ladder, four tankers, and a chief. So tanker response, four were dispatched, two arrived on scene, 8 minutes. For the first one, 15 for the second one. So again, with their tankers, they had 15 people, and without the tankers, they had 14. Looking at Zebulon Fire, this was 1304 Carroll Heights Road. This was a working fire, three engines, a ladder, three tankers, and a chief were dispatched. You can see, looking at the 12-minute mark, only had 19 firefighters on scene within 12 minutes. As far as tankers,
you meant to say nine firefighters.
Did I say, I'm sorry, nine firefighters. Thank you. Looking at the tankers for this call, four were dispatched, four arrived on scene. First three arrived on scene pretty quick, 10 minutes, 11 minutes, and 17 minutes. That last one was a little over an hour before it arrived on scene. So if we take our tankers out of the equation, had three firefighters that were there that were not on tankers and not assigned to tankers, and then with the tankers we had nine within that 12 minutes. Another call in Zebulon at 2101 West Gannon Avenue, another working fire. You can see within 12 minutes we had a total of nine firefighters that arrived on scene. Initial dispatch was three engines, a ladder, three tankers, and one chief. Tankers for this call, three tankers were dispatched, three arrived on scene. 9 minutes, 12 minutes, and 28 minutes for our tankers. So our firefighters are on scene within 12 minutes. With tankers was nine, and without tankers was seven. So kind of talking about next steps, we need to continue evaluating our 7-minute response time standard. We also need to continue to evaluate our effective response force for structure fires in the county, as well as our tanker response. And then, of course, based on all this information and data, the Fire Service Director will utilize this information for decision-making on increasing or decreasing fire service resources, station, staffing, and equipment. And he's going to talk about that a little bit more here at the end. So is there any questions that I can answer? I know that's a lot of information. If I need to meet with any of the departments individually to go over anything specific, then I'll be more than happy to do that. We are looking at evaluating this data every 6 months, so we're hoping to do a presentation or a report every 6 months that has this information in it as well.
Hey, Joe. This is Ron Early, Wake Forest.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me? Hey, I don't mind saying in front of everybody, I don't think I've ever seen a presentation as thorough and data-driven as what you've done today. So personally, I appreciate what you've done, and I'd love to see more of this in the future.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate that.
Joe, Tim.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Ditto Chief Early's comments. But one question I had is we discussed this on the early on a year or so ago, back when we were working on the development of the surface level objectives. But did you notice any correlation or effect of unstaffed units being dispatched as part of the run orders versus staff units, and if that did have a cause and effect?
So, that's a good question. I do think there is, looking at the units that were dispatched in some of these situations, the calls that had less personnel, there were several calls that we found that had less personnel. Let's say they dispatched three engines, a ladder, and a chief officer. If those three engines were not staffed engines, then yes, those numbers were much less, and typically were not meeting their ERF.
Joe Criddle.
Yes, sir.
Just out of curiosity, you were having some difficulty getting CAM data, and I guess two questions. How did you come up with our data? And then two, were the numbers for Morrisville Rural just calls outside of 1,000 feet of a hydrant?
So the data that I had for Morrisville came from the spreadsheet or the database that Chief Holt developed. So it did pull the calls out. I believe it was everything in the unincorporated area. Chief Holt, do you want to talk about that and kind of how that's pulled right now and what you're working on with CAM?
Yeah, the problem with CAM is not being able to read the data or accept their data input. We can do that. In fact, it's a more simple format than RWECC's format. So we can read it. The problem we have had with CAM is not really a problem. It's personnel switches over there, meaning the original individual I was working with is no longer there. And then by the time I get a response, everybody's busy towards the end of the year, holidays. It just kind of got put on the back burner. But, we can get it. I've been told we can get it, and we can get a live data feed of it. The exact words of the individual I was speaking to and working with was, wheels of government run completely very slowly, as we all know. So with that being said, they're willing to do it. They just have not gotten around to it yet.
Well, in the interest of accuracy, Joe, I would love, I agree with what everybody said. That was an awesome presentation, but I will tell you that the numbers in Morrisville are off by volume and more than likely travel time. And I would be happy for us to supply you with the analyzed data, just as you're requesting, with equal parameters. We just need to know what they are, and we'll provide you real time. And furthermore, I'd be willing to work with anybody else to get the data in a way that you can analyze it for county analysis. So, it seems to me like you probably just got the calls that Raleigh Wake was able to take and handle and process to carry, at least for us. That's what it appears, my guess.
That is correct. That's what we've got. It's what Raleigh Wake handles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely, Chief Curl, if we can't get kind of a fix, if Darren can't get that worked out with CAM and we need that data for our next evaluation, we'll make sure that we're pulling those numbers and that raw data for you guys as well as Apex as well and Kerry?
Yeah, Joe, this is Mickey and Apex. We're in the process of hiring a systems and performance analyst, so once they're up to speed, we will definitely be able to improve our ability to provide the data that's needed in a timely manner and to work with hopefully Kerry to figure out how to make these connections that we need to make in order to make this as accurate as possible.
Yeah, that would be great. So looking forward to that. Thank you, Chief. Any other questions before I pass it back to Daryl?
Joe, on the tanker response, and as we all know, you know, in a lot of parts, in a lot of the unincorporated area, the tanker response is going to be crucial to the outcome, the timely response of tankers. And I'm trying to remember back from the service level jet, is the four tankers, are they required within that 12-minute parameter on ERL, or was that extended for the tankers? I'm trying to remember. Either way, what's our next steps there?
So, I mean, I think that brings up a good point. We talked a little bit about that internally in our office, and, you know, I think one of the things we may need to look at or make a decision on is, do we want the same travel time standard for our tankers as we do for our engines, ladders, and chief officers, or do we want to look at it in a different way? So I think that's a bigger discussion. I think that's something that we definitely need to look at down the road.
I can tell you from our area standpoint, if they're not there in a timely manner, and we don't have the water supply to handle the fire flow requirements, you know, it's going to be a long day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important in our area to have them there very timely to the outcome.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and looking at the ERF is, you know, without the tankers, we're looking at 13 firefighters for our ERF. With the tankers, you know, that changes that number. So yeah, I think if we want to look at the tankers within that 12 minutes, depending on where they're coming from, that may be difficult to achieve that ERF within 12 minutes.
Tim Herman, if you're on, I don't think the tankers were included in the 12 minutes. I think the water supply engine was, which, Joe, which may be where you're dropping those three people to get back to 13. Herman, is that right?
Yes, sir, that's correct. We left the water supply engine in there because, assuming it was a staffed engine, the only thing we left out were tankers.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what our office internally has been talking about is, we need the ability, if a tanker shuttle was not set up at a water point, to be able to drop that engine off, you know, to get it to 13 to look at these numbers. And again, the piece that we were supposed to look at is, how long is it taking tankers to get there? And I think that's kind of what Joe has shown is, you know, I think for the most part, we were getting two to three tankers there within, I think Joe and I looked at maybe 20, 25 minutes. Because we were thinking with the number of engines that you had, you probably could start your attack and sustain some type of knockdown or fire suppression for that amount of time waiting to get tankers set up.
Yeah, Daryl, I think, you know, I think first two tankers were within about 15 minutes. What we were finding is because we're pulling that extra person off the engine to move over to the tanker, even though the tanker's on scene, we still have the same amount of people. So that's something that we're looking at as well, is how to correct that without pulling that person off the truck. How do we add that additional person as well as that tanker, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Hey, Gerald, I got a quick question for you. When you went through and did these analysis, did you actually pull the data to see how many people were on the specific trucks that ran the call, or were you just going by three per truck?
So for the working structure fires, we reached out to all the departments, those 10, and actually got their fire report, and the numbers that you saw in the presentation were pulled off of their fire reports, so they should be accurate.
more questions for Joe, and then I'm gonna just toss some things out there. All right, I'm gonna share my screen right quick. Y'all remember when we recommended this long-range plan, standards and guiding principles, we did it with the recommendation that we would also look at supporting documentation such as older studies that have been done, and as well as the ITRE ORED study. So I think Joe indicated on there some possible deficiencies. They actually line up with what ITRE ORED had with possible new station locations. So I just kind of thought it was funny that, you know, some of us thought that we didn't get as much as we thought out of this ITRE ORED study, but if you look at some of the deficiencies, they line up exactly with what ITRE ORED has stated. But I thought I'd share that right quick. As far as where do we go from here? So I'm gonna kind of talk about regions. When you look at the South, and particularly, I'm gonna leave the ITRE ORED study up. When you look at areas 1 and 4 down there, and then some of the deficiencies around the, and I hate to call them deficiencies, but some of the arrival times and things for Fuquay and Garner, we have new stations going in at Garner. We have new station going in at Fuquay. Holly Springs is working on a new station, so I think we need to wait and get those up and going before we, and take a harder look at then at possibly what the needs are to see these new station locations and deployments out of there, kind of take care of some of those problems. We also have 540 coming through that area. And for those of you who don't know, 540 is coming very, very close to Garner Station 2. We have to look at impacts of what's that going to do, not only for Garner Station 2, but for Fuquay and for Fairview and Holly Springs on where exit ramps and other things like that are at. So doing something in the South region right now, I think, again, as part of the ARPA funding and the new academy that starts, there's going to be some personnel that go into that area at these new stations. So, you know, I think my best guess right now is we're going to wait and see how that affects Wendell. I think we'll look at another year based on mark number 3 there from the ITRE ORED study. It may be an opportunity to do something in the next maybe 5-7 years with Wendell Station 2. The Hook, I think all of us have known that there was going to be travel time issues in the Hook. So that is something that we'll be looking at as part of this budget process on maybe a 3-year plan on looking for land, building design, different things like that. And then East Side, if you look at the whole East Side of the county, it just hasn't developed as fast as the West and the South. It's moving that way now because, you know, to be honest, it just isn't that much more places people can build in the West and in the South. So they're, I'm going to call it underdeveloped, for the lack of a better word, underdeveloped in stations and manpower. So a large focus, I think, this year is going to be some staffing increases on the East Side. You will see that backed up here with what Joe's got, as well as with concurrent calls and call volume. And while we're talking about call volume, I'm going to be sending you an email asking for your last 3 years of calls, not a total list, but how many calls you ran, and then how many of them were concurrent calls again. I asked you for that a while back and only asked for 2 years, but somebody's going to question me if I compare the COVID year to this year. So I want to go back the year before. So I'm going to be asking you for 3 years of call data, just actually what your call volume was, how it's increased, and how your concurrent calls have increased, because I think that will be helpful data, as you'll see as we move further into budget when we ask for additional staffing. It's going to help support that. Any questions? No questions? Bob Stagg, you still on?
Daryl, I got a quick question. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. Back to the thing with emergency reporting. would it make it easier to do some of these reports if we broached the subject of either a rostering module in emergency reporting or something where if we run a call with Fuquay or Apex, they know how many people we have on our trucks, especially if we're going to be staffing some above the three to help correlate this data, instead of having to call around after a call to find out how many people were on each department's trucks?
So, Chief Smith, if you can solve this, you should have my job. I'll give it to you today. But y'all use very different RMS packages all around the board. Only the not-for-profits and a few of y'all use emergency reporting. And as we all know, emergency reporting has been bought by ESO, and not really sure how that's going to look and how that's going to go. So I'm not sure that rostering from whatever Fuquay chooses to use for their RMS package versus whatever Holly Springs chooses to use, I'm not sure how that would work. And then also getting that back into the CAD for those reports. That answer your question, Chief Smith?
It did. I just was seeing if it would be something that would be worth exploring to make things a little bit more, you know, accurate, instead of, you know, having to try and track down who was on the trucks.
It would certainly make it much easier if everybody was on the same RMS system. That's really what makes EMS, you know, because they're one department in, you know, countywide, but, you know, their data gathering is so much easier than ours because everybody's on the same RMS. We have never had any success, no matter who was sitting in this seat up here, trying to get everybody on the same RMS package. I think Chris Perry may be on. He can probably chime in, because probably when he was up here, that may have been a try at one time.
Yeah, coordination between the different RMSs is definitely a challenge. Even the formatting of how some of the non-NIFRS data is collected in custom fields and that kind of thing, but there's a lot of opportunities to try to do better on a collective basis.
Mr. Stagg, unless there's any more questions, I don't know that we have anything other than, you know, y'all are going to get to see this twice. Joe will be making the same presentation to the Fire Commission in January. I will also be making the salary study presentation to the Fire Commission in January. And again, if you could see the whiteboard in my office, my priorities for this year are the same as the county manager's, which staffing is first. I know typically in the past, even at the county level, we always said, hey, what do we got left to take care of our staffing? The priority level at the county manager's office this year was take care of our current staff, and how do we retain those, and how do we recruit better? So I have pulled that right over into the tax district. So as we start moving through budget, I'm looking at taking care of our current staff and how we get additional staffing to help y'all with, A, the long-range plan, standards and guiding principles, and B, your call volume and your concurrent calls.
Well, I think it's been a great meeting and great presentations. It's a hell of a way to start 2022. I think building off the fact that it was what our goal when we started advancing is everything to be data-driven. We have data-driven on the salaries, if you will, and then Joe's presentation, et cetera. You know, we're looking at data. We call it as we see it. And I mean, historically, we've said we present it to the Board of Commissioners, whether it's budgetary or whether it's, you know, long-range plans, et cetera, based upon data, not emotion. The ball's going to eventually be in their court. We've got all the data on our side, so I'm pretty pumped from that standpoint. We make a lot of good changes for the county, so good work for everybody. Anybody else got anything for the good of the group? Joe, you want to remind everybody when the next meeting is? I know we've got the commission meeting coming up, but when is our next administrative committee? Daryl, Joe, you don't want to have that?
Bob, we got it set for January the 26th, I believe, and we may, I'm not sure that we'll need to meet then. We're definitely going to need to meet in February, because that is where I'm hoping by the end of February we have some items to bring to y'all to recommend moving forward with the budget. So let's play the 26th by ear, but definitely the February 23rd meeting we will have to meet. And just right quick, I want to thank Joe. This has been a tremendous, y'all just don't know. Well, some of you know. Some of you just been through the accreditation and dig. This has been a tremendous amount of work and time that he's put into this, and I think we've come out with a good product. For me, it wasn't any surprises. I just think we have the data now to back it up. Again, I want to thank HR. If you're sitting there not pleased with what HR has come back for a salary study, then there's something wrong.
Everything looks positive, and that's a good start for 2022. So let's kind of keep the momentum going. If there's nothing else, anybody else that has anything else, speak now. Haven't heard none. Y'all guys and gals or whatever, have a great day. For God's sakes, be safe. Look out for the boogeyman. And we will talk to you. See you. Darrell, do we know if it's going to be virtual commission this month or face-to-face?
I want to do face-to-face, but I don't think COVID's going to let it. I mean, there's a lot of people on this call right here that's got COVID. I'm not going to name names, but there's a lot of people on this call that are at home today that have tested positive for COVID or are sick and not feeling well. So, guys, it's out there. I would encourage you, if you haven't pushed the mask back wearing at your station on calls, you need to do it for the next 30 days, because our rate in Wake County on positivity is 1 out of 4. 1 out of 4 people that we're testing are testing positive. So it's as high as it's ever been. I think the better thing is that I don't think this particular variant is as bad as the Delta or the other one was, but you're still not feeling very well.
Yeah, and now they're seeing a mixture of COVID and flu coming together in other parts. Israel's identified some. So anyhow, be that as it may, again, you folks be safe. Hope your personnel will remain the same. And that being said, the meeting is adjourned. Thanks, Darrell.